This is Tickets episode 55. Today we're gonna do a little rocking out.
Welcome to the Technology and Higher Education Podcast for the week of June 29th, 2009. Coming to you from the CU Online Studios at the University of Colorado Denver. I'm Brian Yonke, and with me is Anna Tai and Patrick Lowenthal. What's happening, folks?
Good morning.
Hello, guys.
So we've been here probably a half hour at least, and we've recorded one five-second segment.
Hey, we're just catching up from the weekend, right?
I think it was the discussion about movies that sidetracked us the most.
It may have been something like that. So anyways, we're all here. Patrick's joining us today. We're going to talk to him predominantly on some stuff a little bit later. Mm-hmm. We'll ignore him till then.
You can sit in the little corner and just watch Airplane, right?
I will. I'll make funny faces and try to mess with you guys as much as I can.
So we're... We're here on a Monday.
Yes, we are.
It's been kind of one of those weird... It's been a weird couple of weeks for me, you know, coming back from vacation, settling back in, and now... And then I just found this out last Friday that we have a four-day week today. This week's a four-day week, yeah. Because we have Friday off. I didn't know that. That's
really?
Like an instant bonus.
Oh, I've been already planning my schedule around that.
I never know what days we have also, whatever. So anyways, so another four-day week, which is going to be kind of nice.
Yes.
Summer's finally here, I think.
Officially.
I think. Well, officially it's here, but
we had, huge thunderstorms last weekend. Yeah. I was over at the other campus, the Anschutz Medical Campus. I was telling these guys, it was just pitch black all of a sudden. And above our building, you could just see, the funnel clouds just spinning around really slowly. And then the sirens went off, and I was kind of freaking out because I've never really had to deal with situations like that with tornadoes.
When I was a kid, I was deathly afraid of tornadoes, even though they didn't really occur where I was growing up. But then after moving to Ohio, I remember in school we would have tornado, drills and stuff like that.
Really?
And it kind of freaked me out a little bit. But I'd never been as close as you were.
No.
I've never seen this kind of funnel cloud that people talk about.
It was
about.
Crazy. I mean, I lived in Indiana for a couple of years, and I don't think I've ever had heard the siren go off or any, tornadoes here. It's
I think it's this last
insane.
Couple of weeks has been a little insane here.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid, the tornado drills, we'd take our textbook, we'd go in the hall, we kneel down, and you put your book over your head.
Really?
Yeah, it was crazy.
So anyways, we've been kind of just catching up on that kind of stuff. Oh, no, I'm not even going to bring it up. I'm not even going to talk about where I went to breakfast yesterday, because it was so good.
Go for it.
No.
You already brought it up, so...
Not too bad.
You totally has.
I know, you can't just cut it.
So now you guys are going to have to ask me later, and people listening are going to have to send me an email to ask... Where I went for breakfast.
I don't think it was that good.
Yeah, I don't think
or
so
you could
either.
Or you could just check my Flickr site because I took a picture of a sign out in front of it. So, anyways, we want to welcome everyone new to the show.
Thanks, Brian.
I was waiting for you to say something you never did. So,
I was so caught up with your breakfast thing. I got so sidetracked.
But we want to welcome everyone to the show and let you know what we're doing here. See, now he's...
I know, I'm looking over it. Patrick is pulling up the Flickr site.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You guys cannot have sugar in the morning. So anyways,
waffles.
Waffles?
I'm not talking about it. Let's do the show here.
I'm ready.
All right, let's
you
get
know what?
Going.
I was just reading an article about how they're dealing, how their faculty and professors are dealing with students with laptops in the classroom, and, you know, are they taking notes? Are they actually doing Facebook? Or are they taking notes? You know, are they just goofing off on the laptop while the lectures are going on and they're trying to figure out policies? I think I need a policy in here. No laptops while I'm doing the podcast. Because right now I see
four right now. So
and those two
brought these little kernels of information and teasing us.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not our fault. We're pawns in this game.
Anyways, We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. We got a great, great body segment. We're going to talk about music and e-learning, and that's why Patrick's here. But before that, as usual, let's do some news bits.
Yep. You've already heard this really sad news that occurred last Friday, or was it Thursday, the death of Michael Jackson. I guess I just wanted to, raise an interesting point, just how information is so readily available, how we obtain this information in an instant. And the article that I'm just going to talk about is that it basically shut down numerous websites that actually crashed. You know, people trying to search news for, you know, to find out about Michael Jackson and how he died and etc. So, you know, it's just crazy to think that just one news that it affects everyone across the world. I mean, Twitter crashed, numerous blog sites, CNET, etc. I mean, people were just trying to, log in at the same time, trying to, you know, get their information, and it just crashed the network.
It was pretty unreal. I mean, the way it happened, I talked to several people about this. At least, you know, I was sitting at my desk, you know, just working on stuff, you know, and I have my Twitter client open and seeing things coming through, and you'd see, I saw a message or two.
I had that too.
Kind of interesting. I'm like, huh, you know, and the first ones that were coming through were that Michael Jackson was taken to the hospital. Don't think much of it. You're taken to the hospital. Yeah. Usually it's something repairable, you know? And then the next, you know, within that half hour, the Twitter messages were all... And then once that happened, it was a flood, and it was unbelievable. And at one point, I realized, I'm like, you know what? Twitter's not working anymore. My messages aren't coming through or anything like that.
Well, they were saying that Twitter crash is usually saw multiple... Fail whales? Did fail you whale. Get that?
I never got a fail whale, I'm using a Twitter client. I'm not actually on the Twitter site, so that's why I hadn't seen it. But.
And I had moved to Blip, so I was on Blip, and I was doing Blip. I was basically, you know, doing a tribute, me and everyone else. And so every song on Blip was Michael Jackson.
Oh, I know.
It was. And so I had left Twitter. But so I hadn't experienced the crash.
But, you know, and they were talking about sites were going down. It was pretty crazy. It sort of, in a weird way, reminded me of 9/11. Because when that was going on, the internet just stopped working. And it was sites were just pinged and people couldn't get to them. But it was sort of like that. It was just the news had spread. It was kind of unreal. It was really, you know, It makes you think about certain things. You know, one thing is, like, you know, if we depend on the internet so much for information, news, and things like that, if there's something going on, a crisis, an event, or something where we need to be tuned into,
right?
And the internet's not going to be there for us.
Yeah. Well, that was what I was trying to raise. Is that, I mean, you wind back the clock 10, 15 years ago, that any critical or information that occurred, we would have find out, what, the next day in the newspaper or a couple of days later. But now everything's so instantaneously that I guess we do rely on this information. Mm-hmm. In some sense, it's a positive that we do get this, the knowledge and information so quickly. But yet on the negative side is that what you're just proposing or you're raising, that we'd rely on this, the service so so much that... If it was to crash, what would we do? Like,
well, you know, 9/11 was a big one. They talked about it a lot. Was, you know, the internet was down. Also, cell phones, like the cell phone services, were all jammed up, and the radio operators always come back and say we were going strong and they were doing a lot of stuff to help. You know, because ham radio is kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for on this? It's just an old, not so much an old technology, but it's not as popular as it used to be.
Sure.
You know, and you have fewer operators and things like that, but they were still there ready, and they think of themselves as they have the ability to do this kind of public service, and especially when you don't have certain things like, you know, the internet or your mobile phone signals and things like that, it's kind of interesting. So it was a little bit of... an interesting thing to see this happen over just a news story about a celebrity. For
Yeah, that's what's crazy to me is it wasn't 9/11.
Right.
Yeah. It was not. I mean, and we're about to talk about how important music is, but but this wasn't 9/11. This wasn't some kind of huge catastrophe. It was Michael Jackson. I mean, it's, and so that's, to me, is what's so amazing is how something like that, I mean, what would happen if something really horrible happened?
I know. I mean, the way people use the internet has changed in 8 years.
But
with 9/11, we were just going to get the news. We wanted to know what was happening. Now people are participating.
But what was actually happening about, as I'm reading this news, is that people were also making other news stories about other celebrities dying and so on. So
Jeff Goldblum, I think, was one of them.
Yeah, and Harrison Ford. So, you know, it's like, how accurate is the information? Like you said, everyone's contributing to these news stories. So now you're, like, having various sources, and you probably don't even know which one is the most accurate.
Yeah, I mean, that was a whole other discussion that was going on, because apparently TMZ, that celebrity news site, was the first to kind of break the news that he had passed. And the traditional outlets were still waiting because they have kind of a code of conduct that they go by, I guess, for lack of a better term. And so they were waiting for confirmation. And then I guess ultimately what had happened is there was no official confirmation, but every news outlet, every major outlet had reported and said it had happened. Mm. So you know, just things are changing. You know, it's all like, who are you going to believe? And the whole Boyle cried wolf kind of thing. And
well, and my guess is traditional outlets, you know, rely on the AP, and they have kind of this when you have to finally report on something. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the internet, not to mention the bloggers and the people who want to just make stuff up.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Not so crazy as the article that I'm going to talk about. Well, actually, I think it's very neat. You know, it's close to home because it makes me think of some of the stuff that I've talked to some of our faculty about, some of the things that are going on. But just last week, the Georgia School of Medicine, where's that at?
Augusta,
okay. The Georgia School of Medicine announced a suite of applications for their students' iPhones or iPod Touches, and it's all this different reference material for medical students. And I can't remember, it's 5 or 6 apps that they actually worked with a company to develop, and there are different medical things. So there's an app for medical terminology. There's one for people in optical medicine school, and they can use it to calculate the curvature of the eyes and things like that. I'm trying to think what else was in there. There was 5 or so, you know, medical math applications, some sort of calculator. And they have these apps that students can just download, have on their iPod or their iPhone, and then use this, you know, while they're working on their you know, patients and in the school and things like that. And it's just, it's kind of cool.
Does it say that whether the apps run on any other phones besides the iPhone?
I actually did some research and I went to the site, and anything I could find was, it was strictly for the iPhone and iPod Touch, and you had to have a user account for the university to get access to it as well. So
I'm assuming that all the medical students have to either purchase iPhone or give them the phone as part of their program.
That's a good question. I didn't read anything about that. My assumption was that, yeah, that the students had to obtain the device on their own. But you know what? It might be some sort of pilot where, you know, if it proves successful, maybe they'll incur the cost of one of these devices down the road.
Well, and further, if the software is being developed by the university, and it's something that they're not necessarily trying to make, you know, big money on per se, they're just trying to cover the cost, then I could see them limiting it to developing it for one, you know, and if you had to choose one, I don't think the iPhone's crazy. What was interesting to me was at the symposium, I remember during one of the sessions hearing that the positive for the iPhone or touchscreens was bacteria can't, where phones with keyboards have little crevices where bacteria and...
And
it was the first time I'd ever, and so that's not saying the iPhone, it's saying any touchscreen style phone, but that was something that I'd never really thought of before.
Exactly.
Yeah, anything about moving parts, I mean, I think the iPhone only has that one up at the top, right?
Yeah.
And that's about it, so yeah, so, the, I mean, I guess there's a couple other universities out there that have apps for.
Yeah, I'm reading that.
Yeah, about four or five, but this Stanford is the first medical school to have one specifically for medical students. But I thought it was kind of interesting. I think we're going to start seeing more like this. I'd love to see something like this on our campus with our medical school. It's just, you know, taking a technology, you know, making it mobile, making it where, you know, it's supposed to be, you know.
That just-in-time learning, yeah.
Well, here's the thing that popped in my head is I think of Star Trek when, you know, they have their little thing there doing the medical stuff. Like, Next Generation, they did that. It was Dr. Crusher had this device, and it seemed like she did everything with that. They're not far off. You know, you got an iPhone, and you start to doing your calculations in there. That's the first step.
Sure.
So then it goes back to the point we rely on this technology or this service. What happens when it actually crashes? Yeah, how do the students, I guess, how do they divert their learning back to the old traditional way? Or?
Well, my guess is with some of this is stuff without the technology before they couldn't do. And so this is just allowing them to do more. But there's no question that when it fails, it fails. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard some people taking negative stances to, I don't want to see my doctor punching things into it. But it's, you know, before they would either had to make guesses or they'd go over to a computer and look it up anyways.
Right.
So I don't see it. If anything, I see it as a way to allow them to do more. But, yeah, there's no question that we get to the point where we learn to expect it. So what happens when it is my eye surgery and all of a sudden your phone's not charged or who knows what?
Hopefully they're trained well enough to be able to take care of things.
Responsabilidade na minha comunicação, na minha rima composta, discreta, não tem seta, mas na certa te guia numa boa direção. Eu vou lembrando do pandemia.
All right, most of us out there, I would probably say a high percentage of the population out there has some sort of interest or some, you know, they're into music a little bit. You know, myself, I'm a little bit more passionate. A little bit more passionate than most people, but everyone's got, like, songs that they like, you know, someone out there could hear a song and it's going to make them want to dance or just, you know, puts them in a mood. You know, music is just, it's a very powerful medium. And with e-learning and stuff, we're always looking for new ways, creative ways, interesting ways to kind of engage the learner, you know, to engage them in learning and also to, you know, have a better experience on both ends of the table. Patrick Lowenthal's here with us, and he's actually been working with another colleague of ours with music in e-learning and is in the process of working on or publishing a journal article about it. And we thought we'd bring him aboard to just kind of talk about music in general, music and e-learning, things that we could do, things that are being done, and so on and so on. So, Patrick, even though we welcome you, we're going to welcome you again.
Definitely. Good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about music and e-learning, what you've done, what you're doing, what seems to be working.
Definitely. It's music's something that me and my colleague, Joni Dunlop, we're like you, Brian, music's a big part of who we are. I remember, you know, I used to always get in the discussion with someone, would you rather, you know, lose your sight or your hearing? And to me, I'd rather lose my sight because music is just such a core part of who I am. My wife thinks I'm crazy because she'd rather lose her hearing. So we get into this discussion a lot because, so music's always been important to me, and I know it's been important with Joni, but really what's happened in the last, really, I'd say year and a half, 2 years, Web 2.0 and these internet-like jukeboxes like Pandora, they are making the ability to share and connect and listen to music online so much easier and different than before and legal, and I mean, there's so many great things about it. And so this has come about where Joni and I, we both started experimenting, and I believe it was the fall semester, with using music in our class for the first time without talking to each other about it. And then we later said, oh, you did that? Well, I did this. And we both had really powerful experiences, and I'll talk a minute about what we did. But really it was through that Joni and I started talking more about, well, wow, what are other ways that you can use music in your classroom? You know, I think that, Brian, you hit on a key thing. Music is such a fundamental thing. It's we find it throughout every civilization, culture. It's something that even someone like my wife, who probably doesn't think of herself as a music person, you know, if she hears the song that we dance to at our wedding, or there's certain things that bring back memories that are so strong. And so music is a fundamental part of, I think, everyone. Some of us are a little more passionate or go a little overboard with it, per se. But as we, you know, believe, Joni and I, per se, and a lot of people, believe that it is fundamental to everyone. And so really, how can we leverage that online? And so with online, one of the things I always struggle with, Joni always struggles, a lot of people struggle with is this. One of the things that always comes up is students feel isolated. It's how do you bring people together? How do you build community? Mm-hmm. How do you connect? How do you increase engagement? And so one of the things that I did in the spring semester was I wanted, and I've talked before in the past about storytelling, and I'm a strong believer in the power of story too. And so I came up with this activity, and it was kind of an icebreaker, but this was done halfway through the semester. And so it wasn't the first thing like we did, you know, day one when they just got to know each other. At this point, they knew each other, and this was an activity halfway through the semester where I had them go to a Songza. Actually, I told them they could go to any site that they could share a specific song, but I did not want them sharing anything from their personal collection, so there was no uploading of, you know, private songs. But I wanted them to go pick a song that motivated them in some way, whether it was something that you want to listen to when you're running a race or at the gym or taking a bath or whatever it is, a song that's important to you, share the song by getting the link on Songza and tell us a brief story about it. And I was blown away. You know, so one of the things that we tried to do are lots of fun kind of activities like this throughout the semester. And I've done lots of types of these activities before. I've never seen one as powerful as this. I was blown away by the stories and the songs. And here's a group of students that I thought I knew them. But all of a sudden when someone's telling me, that, you know, their favorite songs by 50 Cent, or this other one's talking about how they like to line dance, I'm learning so much more about them through them just telling me short little stories. Mm-hmm. One student, his father used to play with Jim Croce and something really horrible happened. I mean, there were so many great, rich stories that came from this. And so I walked away from that experience thinking, wow, just from community building alone, building social presence, connecting, building a community of learners, that I thought it was highly successful. Then I later talked to Joni. She had done something a little differently, where she had students create a soundtrack of their life. And so she had used a tool called FineTune that at that time allowed you to create soundtracks or playlists of up to 40 songs, was it?
I think that was the minimum.
That was the minimum.
You had to have 45 songs in your playlist before you could share it.
So she did something similar where they, and it was once again more on the community building kind of perspective. And so long story short, both of us had really powerful experiences with this. And we thought music was important to us, but seeing it kind of come, and students talked about just how powerful it was. And so through that, we started writing an article. Basically, our attitude was, wow, we got to write about this and share about this. And we started brainstorming other ways that we could use music. How can you use music to help teach content? How can you use it to introduce a week? Or, I mean, all kinds of ways that you can kind of do this. Anna and I earlier today were talking about, I remember I was a freshman in college. I was taking a sociology course. And we were studying, this is the bad part, I don't even remember what we were studying, but I got this song by The Levelers that really illustrated the point, and it was a song about the river and the flow, and I wrote up the lyrics and gave the instructor a cassette tape of it, and he allowed me, it illustrated the point, and I got full credit for the assignment. So I can think of, like, throughout history, in my history at least, trying to find ways to use music meaningfully in my own learning.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had something similar. It was a freshman English class, and we had to take some piece of literature or something and interpret it.
Yeah.
And I took a song and did the same thing, and it was a bad interpretation, and I'll share it with you guys afterward.
But so there are a lot of meaningful ways, and in our article we write about lots of different ways that you can kind of use music, and there's no question that some of the content type might make more sense for humanities or literature or social science than, say, maybe biology, but I would argue you could probably think about any kind of way. And I think about that kind of, does art imitate life or life imitate art? It's this kind of, music is a representation of the lives we live. And so everything we do in our classrooms should have some relevance to the life we live outside of it. And how do we bring that in? And music's just one way. And so that's kind of some of the things we've been doing. So talk to, you know, what do you guys, what does that make you think of when you hear some of this?
Well, actually, I want to quickly raise a question. I think, obviously, we've talked about how powerful music can, I guess, be such an influence on students and professors and whoever that, you know, enjoys music. I guess I want to look at the other way in terms of the challenges. When you talk about a lot of schools, especially like, you know, in the K-12 area, where they're cutting all these programs, like music programs are probably the first ones to go. So I guess looking at the higher educational institution, how do we actually encourage or bring back, I guess, music education and teach that to the students so that they can actually pass on that, I guess, that era to influence other students to become more, to embrace music into, you know, society?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, and that's something I think that we struggle with both in K-12 is, you know, high stakes testing, other things, is music and art has been one of the first things that they cut. And then even in higher ed, we struggle with this, you know, what goes in a core curriculum, and really should you force people to take liberal arts classes? I took a music appreciation class in college. I chose to, but it, mm-hmm. and I loved it, but it's, and I think it made me a better person, but no, I think you're, to me, even the bigger question is, you know, how do we educate well-rounded students, you know, and to me, part of that is an appreciation of music. Part of it's being able to express what they know in different ways. And, mm-hmm. and reading and writing is definitely one way of doing it, but that there are a lot of other ways. And so how do we bring in movement, performance, music, and these things, creativity, into the classroom? And I think that that's sometimes I think we get caught up in that, well, you know, in my biology class, I don't know why I keep thinking biology, and this isn't a knock against biology, but it's not my job to teach music. Or people say, oh, well, in this class, it's not my job to teach grammar. Well, there's mm-hmm. certain kind of fundamental things that arguably should be cutting through all of our classes. And I think not necessarily per se teaching music, but mm-hmm. rather appreciating and expressing the way we know things in multiple modalities, and music being one of them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that definitely music has a way to kind of do some of that.
Yeah, I had a very very similar conversation this morning with another colleague about just audio and music in general in instructional content items. So, for example, if you go to a website and maybe you have a video that you've created or you're downloading as a student of like how to do something, and you know it basically gets you from point A to point B and you watch the steps and you're done. There's a good chance that there might not be any audio. Maybe it's just a visual instruction where you just see the steps. Okay, you got it in your head and you're off. And for me, a lot of times, that's all I need. I just want to, you know, if I'm using a software and I need software application, I need to figure out how to do something that I don't, I'll find a tutorial. I'll watch it. I may even go real fast. Just I need to know where to click and I'm good to know. Go. A lot of people, they'll watch these. In fact, I had in the one class that I'm teaching this semester, I had a bunch of students go to some instructional video site and look at content and then come back and critique it and, you know, explain what they thought was missing, what could have been better. And there were several that they felt needed background music, music in the background. Though to really successfully perform instruction, you don't necessarily need music, but it seems like people feel better with it. What are your thoughts on that?
There's some research that Richard Mayer has done that sometimes background music can interfere. And so I think it depends on the music, and I think it depends on the task.
I agree. Now, you know, and that's one thing that popped in my head. For me, it would feel like it would interfere. Is it maybe just we're so used to TV and all the stuff going on and music being there, and any sort of silence is just uncomfortable to mm-hmm. people? Or
Silence is an interesting, actually, just instructional topic to think about. But and that might even be something we can sometimes talk about, the power of silence. But to me, I find myself, I go into a restaurant, and when there's no music and it's eerily quiet, I notice every time. My wife's like, what is wrong with you? It's just so there's definitely, I think some people are probably more in tune with that than others, to the silence or the lack of music. I think with background music is, you know, if all of a sudden, let's go back to 50 Cent, you have some seriously loud music in the background, maybe with lyrics, maybe with that, maybe that's not as powerful as Beethoven. And so I think that there's a lot that we need to kind of, the research needs to be done about when and how we use music. But I think that there's, you know, digital storytelling we've talked about before. One of the strong things about that is the music in the background. I mean, so I think music is very powerful, and I think we have to think about when and how we use it, and hopefully do some more research to find out when it works and doesn't. I mean, that's Joni and I want to follow up with this paper, because this paper is more of a teaching piece. It's more of an idea piece. Mm-hmm. We want to follow up with some research and find out, well, we think these things are happening. Mm-hmm. Let's actually formally study it and see.
Well, you know, that's the question the first question that I ask is, sure, you know, you have these great little things that you can do in your class, you know, to get to know your students better, you know, ice-breaking type things. But what about when you want to get purely into some of the content, you know? Mm-hmm. If I'm teaching, like, a calculus class, what good is music going to be for me in my online calculus class to my students? I don't know.
And I think that, you know, calculus is a harder one where...
Well, just a quick time out. No, I'll never teach calculus.
So. Well, it's... I took calculus in high school, so I'm trying to think about what I learned or didn't learn. And part of me even wonders with, you know, music from a math point of view, beats per minute and other things. I think in certain ways, music and math go together very well. But I think that there's no question when it comes to content, I think it's probably easier to teach some subjects than others. But I would love to challenge, you know, any calculus teacher out there to find meaningful ways, and I'm sure there are ways. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to experiment with other ways. And one of the things is, we know, especially with younger students, music's very important to their identity, who they are. And so I think there are a lot of different ways that you can kind of bring it together and bring music in meaningful ways. With that being said, I think with any instructional approach, too much of a good thing can be a problem. And so should you have music every day, every week? And could it get old? Definitely. But I think that music's often one of those things that we don't think about including in our e-learning courses, whereas Joni and I are arguing now, well, why? Well, you know, it's so much easier now with some of these internet jukeboxes. Let's find a meaningful ways, even if it's just having a background track for the introduction for each week. So when students are reading about it, there's all kinds of ways that you can probably think about doing it, but that's kind of where we are at right now.
You mentioned before, like, you know, that you wanted to focus more extensively on the research part. I guess I want to take it, you know, move forward on this, is what type of approach or what sort of a research area you and your colleague Joni are thinking of focusing on in terms of how to utilize, you know, music within e-learning?
Specifically, one of the things, I mean, Joni and I, we talk a lot about social presence, and we try to research social presence and community building and how we create a community of learners. And so really, it's the, we believe, for instance, this activity that I did and she did her own form of really increased social presence. That is the sense of being there online. And so everyone got a better sense of each other. That's what we think. And I know I felt like I got a better sense of. But I'm the instructor. I'm not the student. So let's actually interview him and let's find out. Mm-hmm. Let's do the activity. And so it's and not even really an experimental type thing where we have something that we add in and do a pre and post, but rather just interview him and see, did this produce what we think it is, or what was your action? So really that type of...
So when you actually, I guess, adopted that activity in your class, I mean... Generally, overall, what has been the feedback from the students? Did they, you know, come back to you and say, Patrick, you know, that was probably the most fun assignment that I actually got to work on in this class? Or I'm not too sure. Like, has there been any sort of feedback from the students?
Definitely. We had each week in that course, we would do in my course, and I can't speak specifically about Joni's right now, but in my course, we had weekly surveys where they gave feedback. And both within the discussion, in the weekly survey, and then at the end of the semester, that was brought up a number of times by students. And so there's no question to me, anecdotally, that some of them definitely thought it was powerful and it was meaningful. But it's something that we want to kind of more systematically study over time and see, okay, with multiple classes, you know, because one of the things when we submitted our articles under review right now, but when we first submitted, one of the things we got back was, well, couldn't these types of activities turn off some students? And hypothetically, they might. Mm-hmm. But we don't, you know, let's find out. How often does that really happen? And so that's mm-hmm. kind of, you know, what happens is a lot of times with teaching is sometimes we'll start with the research and what we know. Other times we'll just try an activity and then it's, well, we think it was powerful and meaningful and let's find out. You know, we could later even try to, if we wanted to start teaching rapping content, using music to teach content in our areas, we could explore with that as well. You know, we've talked about ways to use, is it Animoto? Mm-hmm. Where you can do like music videos or trying to, I mean, there's so many different ways we want to think of not just music and the, but how do you bring in that performative type, that other aspects of our life that tend to not be brought in the classroom? But mm-hmm. if we want to educate the whole person, you know, because while we, you know, come from this line that all of our learning only happens in our brain, we believe research shows that we learn, it's full bodied and mm-hmm. it's, you know, people talk about situated learning or embodied cognition. Mm-hmm. This kind of, we are full people and how do we in our classrooms, you know, kind of take advantage of that and let students kind of fully blossom and kind of express their strengths and what they know in multiple ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, let's look at that a little bit. I mean, before we stop talking here, because I know we only got a couple more minutes, but let's just say, you know, I'm an instructor and I'm kind of curious about maybe integrating some of this music stuff into my course, whether it be in the classroom or, you know, in an e-learning show or something like that. What sort of tools are out there? What could I use? What kind of things could I do to get this music into my class that's easy and more specifically free and legal, I guess, because we all know those issues with music.
Definitely. A lot of copyright issues. And so that's the first thing I would recommend. Have firm policies on that because you don't want to get there. But the easiest way would be to simply have some type of icebreaker activity, whether the first thing in the semester or somewhere where – and it could be as simple as when I'm saying who I am, and usually an instructor will introduce themselves the first week of the course. At bare minimum, you can include a song and say, you know, I like this music. And so that's probably, you know, training wheels. That's dipping your toe in the mm-hmm. water. But if you want to go further, some of the tools out there, and I can give, we can put a list of them on the Tech Ed's website, but there are a number, and in each day it seems like we're finding more and more mm-hmm. of these internet jukebox tools that allow you to create songs and create playlists and do all kinds of really cool things and share things legally. But other ways that an instructor could start to do things would be to find ways to find songs that are tied into what they teach. Mm-hmm. So for instance, Joni and I have talked about how if we think about the way education and learning is represented in popular music, we think of things like Pink Floyd, We Don't Need No Education. And I mean, there's all these songs, and rarely do we think of education and learning in school in positive mm-hmm. lights. Well, why is that? And that's a discussion. And so I think that one of the things, depending on what you teach, is to think about, do you know of any ways that pop culture and music addresses your subject? You know, and so I think that that's another way to kind of pull it in. Mm-hmm. You know, we can also share a draft of the article on the Tech Ed site, and we list, I think it's 5 or 6 different strategies of ways that we think of, but we would love to hear other ways that people are using music in their mm-hmm. classroom.
Or if they're curious and want to learn more about it or work with us, we're always about that too, you know.
Definitely.
Or take a look at some of these apps, you know. One of the easiest, I think, is Songza. It's literally a music search engine for music that's available freely on the internet. You can do a search for the song you're looking for, find the search, and then you have the ability from within that site to share it out, whether, you know, email it to a friend, share it out to a website, get an embed code that you can mm-hmm. put in your, you know, e-learning shell. That's the easiest way to start. And then
Definitely.
There's some of these other jukeboxes that you had mentioned before, you know, Pandora, FineTune, Last.fm. We could go on and on with some of those. And we'll put a list in there. But start looking at some of those tools and see what's out there. And I guarantee you what's going to happen is you're going to get sucked into those tools because they're a lot of fun.
Definitely. And one of the things we didn't get into today or we didn't get into in our article that much is there's a lot of research that shows about music in the brain and learning. And you know, for a while, parents just having their kids listen to Little Einsteins and the Mozart effect and will it make you smarter? And mm-hmm. I mean, so it's like we could talk for days on some of this stuff because it is something. And it goes back to your thing is what happens when we're taking music out of the classroom? Mm-hmm. Are we kind of really hurting our kids through this process? And so it's not just fun and meaningful. It's something that science suggests that perhaps it has a strong connection with how we learn in our brains. Salah, hey yo, salah, she, salah, de wo, salah, she.
And that concludes yet another episode of the Tech Heads podcast, Technology and Higher Education. I'd like to thank Anna and Patrick for joining me. Patrick specifically this week, and Anna every week as we do this. Thanks all. Want to mention a couple things. You can contact us or get a hold of us if you want to talk about any of this stuff. You can go to techheads.com, that's TECHHEDS.com, and go to the contact tab and send us an email if you want to talk about some of the stuff or ask us any questions about stuff we've talked about today, specifically on the music and e-learning and music in the classroom. You can suggest topics for things you want to hear about in the program. If you want to be on the show, we're welcome to have anyone. Just drop us a line. You can go to the website, techheds.com, TECHHEDS, and listen to any of all of our old shows. They're all there. You can see our video podcasts. You can click on our Twitter link. You can follow us. There's just all kinds of stuff, so definitely check that out. I know for those of you that listen to the show, I say this every week, but, you know, can't say too much of a good thing. Again, Patrick, thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys next week when we will be talking about, you gotta wait and see. You just gonna smile at me? You gotta say goodbye or something.
See you later.
That's better. Take care, guys.
See you guys.